My name is Anne Starr Horlocker, and today I'm talking with Julie Walton. Today is the 30th of April. 2018.
Yeah, just in case.
And we're in the public library. I'm going to read from, I think, the Washington County News. There's a picture of the old Washington County Library, and the caption under the picture is, "The library as it looked in 1924, just 3 years after its completion. Note the fence and the trees and the new sidewalk. When the building was first completed in 1919, the street in front of the building was still bare, packed earth." This is the article. St. George has had one of the first libraries in the state, almost before the people were settled and before they had any certain assurance of livelihood. They began to look for materials for self-improvement. That material included books for a library. In 1864, the United Territorial Assembly passed an act to incorporate the St. George Library Association. The act named Orson Pratt Sr., Erastus Snow, F.D. Woolley, A.M. Cannon, Jacob Gates, Orson Pratt Jr., and James G. Blake, or Bleak, and their associates and successors in office as a body corporate to be known and styled as the St. George Library Association, with all authority necessary to build and maintain a library. That the pioneers believed in laying the right kind of foundation for whatever they undertook is very evident. Here in the desert, far removed from the world of education, while enduring every hardship and without comforts or conveniences, almost without the necessities of life, and with little assurance that they could make a success of their venture in this desolate and unattractive land, they began planning for a library. Legend tells us that these pioneers raised funds for the purchase of books through produce which was collected as tickets for parties of various kinds. 1 quart of molasses was required as a ticket of admittance. This quart was placed in a 60-gallon barrel until the barrel was filled. And when 6 of the 60-gallon barrels were thus filled, this and other valuable produce similarly acquired was taken to Salt Lake City and sold or exchanged for books and other reading materials. The books thus purchased, together with others in the town for Sunday school, the Mutual Improvement Association, and for the Relief Society, were housed in the Lyceum. In 1907, the state legislature passed an act providing that cities of the third class may establish and maintain public library and gymnasium and access a mill levy for the same. George F. Whitehead was the mayor who met with the city council and established the present library, appointed the boards of directors. The St. George State Academy, now Dixie College, being established, and now Dixie State College, being established about this time, the books were housed in the new college building. Ida Miles was appointed the first librarian in the year of 1912, shortly after the new church school was opened. In 1912, the city commission, with Thomas Judd as mayor, made application to the Carnegie Foundation for a grant for a library building. The first request was for $5,000, with a guarantee of $500 annually from the city of St. George for maintenance. After a more thought consideration, the commission sent a second request to the Carnegie Foundation offering to furnish $800 annually for maintenance if the grant could be increased to $8,000. This grant they received in 1915. To it was added another $4,000 from the city, making a total of $12,000 for the structure. With these funds, the present building was completed in 1916. In 1919, the state legislature made it possible for the counties to levy a tax for the library purpose. Washington County only possibly of such a service was through the St. George Public Library. From the minutes of the library board meeting June 14, 1919, page 31 of the record book, we read the following, quote, "Present were Mayor Miller, A.K. McFarlane, and Thomas P. Cottom, President E.S. Romney of the Dixie College asked that the library be made a county library and read H.B. number 97 relative to establishing county libraries. The question was thoroughly discussed with a motion by President E.H. Snow to the motion by President E.H. Snow to the effect that it be the consensus of this board to discuss with the City Council the features of the new law. The minutes of the June 17, 1919 tells us that an agreement was reached whereby St. George tendered the St. George Library building, books, and etc. to the Washington County Commissioners as a county library, but St. George was to retain the title of the property for the city. They agreed to pay the water and the lights from the building and grounds. The county agreed to levy 1 mill annually to maintain the library. Ione Blake was librarian at this time, but she resigned in June of 1920. Miss Clara Farnsworth was appointed as librarian in September 1920 and held the position until June of 1923. In August of the same year, Mrs. Roxy S. Romney became librarian. Until 1928, all the library books and services was in the adult department. At that time, the board felt that they should divide the books and the work, and so the children's books up to the seventh grade were placed in the basement with Mrs. Jenny Brown as librarian.
Thank you. And tell us about the collection of articles, where this came from.
This was in a book that Iris Huntsman Starr put together from collecting things out of the newspaper and being alert and interested in things going on in St. George and Washington County altogether.
And she's related to you how?
And she's my mother.
Thank you. And you have some other ones because you had a relation in the library. Tell us about her.
Okay. Helen Starr Harris was the children's librarian in 1940, and there are pictures found in the archives of the old Washington County Library was taken, and I have a really good picture of that. Also, this is a few other things from my aunt.
And before, I'm thinking in lieu of how much time you have, and I make copies, maybe I'll record them later.
Okay.
If you would like.
That's
to.
Good.
And tell me about the connection. It was your...
My dad is Howard H. Starr, and this is his sister.
Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned that she was not married when she first took this job, and so...
I don't know if she was librarian a little bit before she got married or a little bit after, but she did not marry until later in life. She did not have children. of her own biologically, but she did marry Parley Harris, who was the doctor here in St. George. So her name was Helen Starr Harris.
And then you said that you had siblings. Oh, and where you lived, because you were not too far from the library. Tell us about where that was in respect to where the library was.
Okay, to start out with, we were the last house on the west side of St. George. There were no neighbors when I was real little. If you just go down Main Street, you would go for quite a ways, and then you would see the Gentry Dairy, and we were probably a mile from that. You go clear down, then you turn left, and our house was the very last house. When we lived in that house, we were right next to the Black Hill, and we would always pick asparagus. That was our sago lily, we called it, and we did that every day. And we had cows and horses, and mostly cows. I was in charge of the chickens, and I learned how to do my numbers and count because of chicken eggs. And my dad, many times as a school teacher, would work out of town in the summer, and he took the car, and so Mom would put me in a wagon and pull me up to town. When I started kindergarten, which I was only four, and it was October, which is not the deadline nowadays, my mom was too sad. She was all alone down there in the field. And so then my parents moved up to town for that reason, and my dad taught at the West Elementary. He taught fourth and sixth grade. And so he taught in the Woodward Building sometimes and in the West Elementary. And the library was right next to the Woodward, facing north.
And why was your mother so sad? Because you're in what line in your family?
Oh, because I'm the baby and the only girl.
And that does explain it.
Yeah.
She told me that earlier before we turned on the recorder. So, and then you also mentioned you had a brother that enjoyed his time.
Yes.
Tell us about him.
He was quite close to Aunt Helen, and he was a very good reader. He read, even all through his life, he has read big fat paperback books in a night and stuff like that. He's a very smart and quick reader. And so he would go over and see Aunt Helen and spend time practically every night after school. He said as he got older, he decided he wanted to play a little more or goof off like a teenager, but for a long time, a big part of his life, that's what he did.
And that would be quite a walk when you're younger. And you're saying by the Black Hill, what would that be around approximately now?
It used to be the Holiday Inn, and now that's not there anymore. It's kind of hard to... we didn't really have an address. There was one family... Boy, I could remember their last name. Anyway, they lived somewhere around that area, and everybody that wanted to drop off their stray cats, LaVon Giles and his wife, but I never saw their home or anything.
Is there anything else you can think of that you'd like to share? Maybe if there was any special books that you enjoyed reading as a child or a librarian who encouraged you to try a new book or anything of that, you could certainly share that now with me.
I think that because my parents wanted me home for some reason all the time, that they got encyclopedias, and so a lot of times if I had a report, I did it at home. Betty, oh, I'm really having a hard time with names. Her mother, I can't think of her mother right now, but she was very nice with me in the library. That was years after my Aunt Helen was there. I think Aunt Helen was there because she loved children and didn't have any of her own. And she put forth a lot of effort. She did story time and did a lot of encouraging children to read and to love to read and have interesting things to do after school and on Saturdays, and thought reading was a form of recreation and a way to picture something in your mind that isn't shown on a picture. As far as, you know, we can all read a book and we all kind of have a little different picture in our mind.
It sounds like she was nurturing and mothering, yes, in this other alternative way, in, mm-hmm, and had a great impact, mm-hmm, on a generation of children.
I remember that I loved the buildings. I loved the big bricks in the buildings. I don't think I've ever lived in a brick house, and I've always been quite enchanted with how these early buildings were made.
Well, thank you for coming today and spending time with me, sharing some of these experiences from the library, and also we're grateful that your mother kept all these, mm-hmm, these clippings, and that you've been a caretaker of them also. So we're very appreciative. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.